Mark is the DA spokesman on finance. What? Just tell us a bit about your academic background. What are you trained as?
I'm a jack of all trades and a master of none.
No. Come tell us. Don't be modest. Where did you go to school?
So I, as an undergraduate, studied at the Farm School of Potchefstroom and did 2 honors degrees there, then moved on to UCT where I did a master's, spent a bit of time in Belgium as part of that. Then I went to the UK and I did a master's at Cambridge, and a few years later I did a PhD.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, okay. And in what? Oh, this is the DA. This is the future of South Africa, as you can see. These aren't the guys who, remember, we heard these chaps who were going into Parliament and they couldn't really write that well and they couldn't really speak that well. Well, it's quite a long way, Prince. He's come.
No, quite. After the past 2 weeks, I also can't speak that well.
Would you guys indulge me? Let's hear from Mark exactly what happened or what went down the last 2 weeks, and indeed the highlights of what happened or lowlights of what happened yesterday.
Yeah, I think it's maybe worth backtracking to about 2 weeks prior to the failed 19 February budget. So the Minister of Finance had started to communicate to Cabinet that there might be a tax increase of some sort, which already was a departure from the midterm budget statement, which came to Parliament at the end of last year. So if you imagine a political agreement, quite formalized, that said no more bailouts and no new taxes, end of last year. Come this year, a couple of weeks before the budget statement should go ahead, the minister started making noises about tax increases without being very specific. He then, as I understand it, shared with our Deputy Minister of Finance, a DA guy, Asho Sarupin, that there will be a VAT increase, a value-added tax increase, and the quantum of that might be as high as 200 basis points.
In other words, 2% from 15 to 17.
That's right. And Asher indicated to him that the DA would not be able to support that. A day or two after that, our top leadership also met with the minister to try and convey to him that this is not something we would be able to stand behind. For reasons still unbeknownst to me, and what I can now only describe as ANC hubris, they decided to go ahead despite our protestation. On the day of the budget speech on this 19th of February, it was announced to Cabinet a couple of hours before the speech that this was the direction, and a lot of the parties within Cabinet were opposed to it, including 4 ANC ministers, saying, but we can't subject South Africans to more taxes, especially not value-added tax, because even though a large chunk of VAT is paid by more affluent South Africans, it disproportionately hurts poor people because they're already so constrained in what they can buy in their basket of goods. And the ANC had to backtrack on the 19th of February and set a new date, which was the 12th of March. And engaged actively, so their leader met with ours, and we kept indicating that we're not in a position to support tax increases. Many conversations were held. We were open-minded and assumed an open negotiating posture on what could be done. But if you'll briefly indulge me, we presented 6 points as an alternative to tax increases. The first said no more taxes, be it corporate income or value-added tax. The second said, let's collect taxes already due. SARS had indicated to us with 3.5 billion rand more, they'd be able to take their compliance from 63 to 67%, which would have delivered revenue far in excess of what a VAT increase might have brought in. So a VAT increase could ostensibly have brought in about 60 billion rand, but there are lots of indications that it wouldn't have been as high as that, and tax compliance would have gone down further. Third point was, we need to open up the economy. We need to allow our ports to function. We need to get Richards Bay and Cape Town devolved and ideally privatized. The fourth point was, we needed to do emergency spending cuts on things like advertising budgets. I mean, the NHI spent 30 million rand advertising a program that is not viable. It cannot be funded. So cut government advertising budgets, cut the executive class dining privileges and all of the catering budgets. Do those things today. And then the point after that, our fifth point, is to do a comprehensive spending review, starting with a 3-month sprint and a longer 9-month strategic process. And what we would aim to do there is find an efficiency across government. To give you one example, Brasa found that 10% of their workforce were ghost employees. It doesn't exist. They're paying these salaries, but nobody's there. And that's just one, you know, leg of the transport behemoth that sits under government. And then finally, the sixth point is, let's not cut any critical services, doctors, nurses, teachers. And let's not cut anything on the front line. And let's also make sure while we're doing that, that we think smartly about social spending, maybe convert it into a job seekers grant, but we're also not proposing cutting social spending, which is another ANC lie. So within our 6-point plan, which is fairly politically neutral, we said tax increases aren't needed. And of course, yesterday, the ANC went ahead and proposed a budget, which again, we cannot support, which will have 100 basis points or 1% over 2 years. So 0.5% this year and 0.5% next year.
Just say that again. You cannot support. What does that mean?
South Africans can't afford to pay more taxes. And while we've got this budget being brought forward, it ignores the fundamental inhibitors of our economy. So if we haven't got a plan in place to devolve some of the worst functioning ports in the world, I mean, I've shared this with you on the show before, Alec, but perhaps for the audience. South African companies are now taking their produce, putting it on trucks, getting it to the border, taking it into Mozambique, paying for an escort in a country in conflict to get it to a privately run port in Mozambique by a South African company, Grindrod, and shipping it from there because that's more efficient than our ports. What I've just described is ludicrous. So we need to remove these inhibitors on the economy as part of our budget process and then not tax South Africans to a level that they can't afford.
Mark, I get it, but my question really was, this morning we had Gayton McKenzie here. I know you were still in Cape Town, or you didn't see Gayton. And he said that if the DA were to die on this hill, the EFF have already said they'll come in. So the government of national unity will continue, but the DA will be out, the EFF will be in. And he said, please don't do that. Please don't do that. Is that a possibility?
So many things wrong with that statement. The first is it wouldn't be a government of national unity. It'll be a government of national division. The EFF just does not ideologically align with the partners in the GNU at the moment. I can't imagine the Freedom Front, for example, staying in a GNU with the EFF in it. So who would be left? It'd probably be the ANC, the PA, and the EFF. But there's another problem with that statement, which is the EFF has said they won't punish South Africans with VAT increases. Their voter base cannot afford anymore. And this has turned out to be a fairly empty ANC threat. I mean, it came out a week and a half ago in the Sunday paper saying that the ANC might do a deal with the EFF. And we said to them, you know what Churchill said, do your worst and we'll do our best. And it turns out that the EFF wasn't willing to do such a deal. So I think Gayton is on the wrong side of this equation. I find him a very entertaining speaker. But the fact is, he's now in the camp of proposing a 1% VAT increase over 2 years. That's a bad camp to be in.
Sure. Prince, you the political analyst sitting amongst us. We've got the economist and the financial guy. What do you make of all of this? Are we heading for... Gayton said the next 12 days are going to be the most crucial in South Africa's history.
Look, it sounds to me that the DA, obviously through Mark, their problem with this budget is this 0.5% VAT increase. Doesn't say anything else other than that. I didn't hear anything else other than that. If that is the case, it's actually the easiest to solve. They accept the whole budget. The only thing they don't accept is this 0.5 percentage point. That's what I'm hearing. So they will have to negotiate that between them and the ANC. And if they negotiate, there are two possible outcomes, and there is no middle ground. One, either the ANC drops that, or the DA accepts that. It's just no middle ground. And one of them will have to give in. I'm not sure if it's going to be the DA or the ANC, but certainly one of them will give in. That's one. Two, I agree with Gaitu. You cannot afford to have the DA out of this GNU. Full stop. under the circumstances, if the DA is out, the EFF is in, that's a doomsday scenario. And all of us, as South Africans, we are going to be extremely unhappy with the DA walking out of this. So when you fight, keep that in mind. But the options is either you accept or the ANC drops it.
Now, Anne Bernstein has been telling us, telling the tribe, there are no questions, okay? If you want a question, there's the app. Thank you. You've been Dr. Doom in South Africa. He's been Dr. Doom and you've been Dr. Doom and you've both been right. Well, to a large degree. I can remember in years gone by and waving flags and saying, watch out, watch out, watch out. And is there enough for what Mark has just said now? Is there enough fat in the system that can be extracted without having to increase taxes?
Absolutely. So I think you've got to look at the budget as a whole.
Keep going. Let's just see. No, keep going. No, keep talking.
So you have to look at the budget as a whole. There are different ways of raising taxes. So by not allowing accommodation for bracket creep because of inflation, our taxes have gone up in this budget. That is only one part of the story. But what's really important is that the government has moved from a position last October in the medium-term budget policy statement where they said, we've got to deal with the deficit, we've got to cut spending. Now they're saying the only way to deal with the deficit is to raise taxes. That's a very different situation. I think this is pretty bad budget. What could you have done? I agree with the DA about ghost workers, of course. We've just done a deal with civil servants at 5.5% for the first year, an above inflation increase. We estimate that if you cut that to 3.5 and CPI for the next 2 years, that's 100 billion over the 3-year period. Take procurement. A massive part of government expenditure is on all the things they buy from everybody else. That's penciled in at 5.4%. If you cut that to 3.5%, it's not going to affect very much if you take away localization requirements, middlemen requirements, set-asides, quotas, whatever. We estimate over 3 years you can save 50 billion. Then there's CETAs. Nobody likes these CETAs. They are not performing. They're corrupt. They're useless. That's 80 billion over 3 years. You could do those things very quickly. I think what's missing at the moment is the Minister of Finance only has so much power, and the President is missing in terms of policy decisions. So there are a lot of policy decisions. I'm not sure about the spending review that the Minister of Finance is talking about. We agree with, have a similar proposal to the DA. We want a serious committee of DA and ANC people, cabinet ministers and others, if necessary, to actually say over the next period, 3-4 months, they're going to look for 40 billion over the 3 years. So there are ways of doing this. They require an acceptance that if we carry on with the policies of the sixth administration, you drive South Africa into more of a crisis. If you accept there is a real coalition, you're now a 40% party, you have to listen to some other people. We can start to change policy. But we're living beyond our means. We need to be like the president of Argentina who campaigned on the slogan, which was, we have no more money.
Beautifully put. Magnus, from the markets, from investors, does this budget give you any reason to change your long-term view that you should be investing offshore?
Thank you, Alex, and nice to talk to you. I haven't seen you for 2 days. You've been busy. I've noticed. And you've been busy. And you put on a tremendous show this year once again.
Thank you.
He deserves it, ladies and gentlemen.
I got to correct you. It's the team. Seriously. You can look at the Bizu's team. I've just been sitting here. They've been doing all the work.
Yeah, sure.
Question.
Let me just make a comment about the Dr. Doom label that I've got. I wear it with pride. We live in a society, and in the last 10 to 15 years, and you've experienced it, to get the truth out to the people has been very difficult. The media has been manipulated. Big corporations in South Africa are too scared to talk the truth. Economists at the big banks get fired if they speak the truth. We know about Chris Hart, Nico Cipionka. So nobody's out there because somehow you're all linked to doing business with government or you work for big corporation. So there's a scarcity of truthful commentators. And it's an honor to sit next to Ann Bernstein, who's been one of them. I read her stuff for years and years and years. You know, and the truth is that for the last 10 to even longer, the budget has failed year after year after year, providing growth, stimulus to the economy, and we can see it in the numbers. Our GDP per capita today is the same as 2007. That's why our unemployment is the highest in the world. That's why there's a report out today by the International Monetary Fund that South Africa is now the worst or the most difficult place in the world to do business. The numbers are just rolling in as they come. There was an analysis last week that South Africa, of all the top 20 countries in the world, since COVID, has performed the worst in terms of economic recovery. So you've got this massive scorecard. Year after year after year, it's just not working. Unemployment is rising. Social discontent is rising. Someone needs to speak the truth. And the truth has been that as an investment destination, South Africa has not been a great place. I'm not saying that. The fund managers of the world are saying this. For 8 years in a row now, year after year, the net outflow out of our stock market, equity market, and to a lesser extent, the bond market, has been negative year after year for 10 years now, 8 years. That's what the world is saying about our economy. And the point I made last year at this conference, me as an investment advisor, I don't work for the asset management companies or the banks or the government. I work for my clients. They expect the truth when it comes to their investments. So to come back to this budget again, I had to laugh when I read the preamble to the budget, and whoever the speech writer was, he got carried away with his thesaurus because he said this is a bold and imaginative budget. Rubbish. It's a failure. It's taking 20 billion or 19 billion out of our pockets. No adjustments for inflation, creep, etc. There's not cutting expenditure. And the net result is there's 20 billion out of the economy. There's no reason for consumption expenditure to rise. The bank shares immediately took a knock. And by the way, I was looking and was playing around. Some of our bank shares, I'm sorry I couldn't listen to Cocky yesterday. I was busy across the hall. Some of our bank shares, for instance, today traded exactly the same price as 10 years ago, Alec. Your old bank, Absa Group, is the same price as it was 10 years ago. Standard Bank, Nedcore, RMB Holdings, those are the engine drivers of our economy. And they all showed to me that there's no petrol in the tank. And as Anne said, we are broke. And what has government done? Didn't touch spending. SOEs, as Moletz and Becky yesterday said, needs to be cut. Our cabinet at 77 members is the largest in the world. There's so much place to cut, but the patronage politics in this world prevents us from cutting, and we're going to pay the price because as we speak now, all the numbers in the budget of yesterday are already out of the date because the growth projections were wrong and it's already out of date. So the economy is not going to grow at 1.8%. It's going to grow at probably 1.3%, 1.4%. Today, the manufacturing numbers came out again, down again. So the numbers are telling us it's like a patient lying there, and there's this doctor saying, but he's going to live, isn't he? But he's busy dying. So we need to do something very dramatically. So I've failed this budget that does not engender any confidence.
Okay, Prince.
Yeah, look.
Adrian Gore was here. He said, as an entrepreneur, you need optimism. I'm going to start from there. So maybe I'm an entrepreneur. I'm too optimistic. I had Helen Ziller sitting here telling us, coalition government starts now. The discussion with the deputy president was exactly the same. And I said that to him. Do you mean you've learnt that the coalition starts now? And in an oblique way, he agreed. Is this where it begins from a political perspective, that now we're going to start seeing action, whereas in the past it was just lip service?
You see, the budget, to the way I understand it, you must ask, whose budget is this? If you want to understand, is this the budget of a government of national unity? Does it reflect a government of national unity? Or does it reflect the DA? Or does it reflect the ANC? That's the question. When I read it, and it's the essence of it is this. It is a typical ANC budget. Let me give you two or three things. Number one, debt to GDP ratio up. Approaching the 77% mark of the World Bank, which is the danger zone. The ANC, that's how it operates. It raises that. That's number one. Number two, the public servants' wage bill up. This year is going to be 7.3 billion. Next year it's rising again. And the third year, it actually goes above 8 billion. So that's the second thing. The third thing, and this is the most worrying part of the budget for me, there's a statement in there by the minister. He says that we now have 28 million South Africans on social grants. 28 million. And he celebrates it. Yeah. He says this reflects our quote commitment to reducing poverty and inequality. Now that's the ANC's understanding of how to build an economy. Now, in my understanding, that doesn't reflect an economy that is thriving. It actually reflects an economy that is moving backward, because an economy that is thriving must offload more and more people from the social grant system. That's what you should be appreciating, not adding more and more people. So over the past 30 years, the ANC has been adding people to our social grant system. So the core of it is this. This is a typical ANC budget. Coalition starts now. That's what they must fight to pull the ANC back, because the ANC is going up in terms of the budget. They must pull the ANC back. Then I will say they are winning.
It was 8 years yesterday since Matthew Lester passed away. I got this from Mark King on it at SARS. Matthew was one of the early contributors to BizNews, and he was a professor of tax at Rhodes University. I'm sure many of us here remember him. And Mark said it's rather ironic that it was on Budget Day, and we know that he would have had lots to comment on. Well, if there were to be a successor, and you're just as direct and straight as Matthew always was, before we let Mark come in with a coalition starts now story, how can you add to the quantifiable issues? I mean, we've had once before, if I recall, where they did do this fiscal drag deal or trick where they didn't adjust the tax rates and then said, oh, there were no tax increases. If I recall, I think Tito did it 1 year. So there've been these sleight of hands, which some of them haven't even worked for quite some time now.
I'm not an expert on the history of budget. I think the I agree with the statement. Why I'm saying this is a very bad budget, it doesn't allow for the SRD grant next year or the year after. So you're going to need one percentage point increase in VAT each year to deal with the SRD grant if it's to continue.
SRD?
The Social Relief of Distress grant, about $33 billion.
In other words, COVID grant.
COVID
grant. Got it for COVID, but you kept it.
The budget doesn't allow for that. It allows this year, but not the next 2 years in the cycle. There is nothing allocated for bailouts for state-owned companies. And if you believe that, I have lots of things to sell you. So that looks implausible. I agree that the assumed growth rate looks high to me, which has been not in the last few years, but over the 15-year period has been a mistake of Treasury's to assume growth would be higher. And you build your numbers on that and then it doesn't deliver. So I think we're in real trouble. What we were saying was that to sign the budget, which the DA hasn't done yet, we strongly advise not to take anything on promise or to have hope as a strategy, but to sign a deal on growth as part of the budget deal. In other words, we're going to agree to immediately after the budget work out a growth strategy for South Africa, which we don't have. And that requires, let's privatize the SOEs or let's do this or let's do that, whatever you can negotiate in a coalition government, but we don't have a growth strategy. So I think you have to accept South Africa's in a very difficult situation. I hope the DA is going to assert more muscle. Now, I know that's easy to say, and I think it's difficult, but you've got to find ways in which the DA is starting to do more than run some departments better than they were before. There's a cross the GNU strategy that this budget situation has raised that I think I would hope with a lot of hard work, one could try and get something more here. So I think if this could be the beginning of something, there are lots of opportunities coming out of this situation. We don't yet have a budget, of course. You've got to vote on the appropriations, and we don't know what's going to happen. There has been one, I think, negative thing that has come out of the, let's call it, the debacle, which I would blame more on the Ministry of Finance, the President, than anyone else. South Africa, democratic South Africa, has been lucky to have an excellent Treasury, a world-class Department of Finance. And this might not be the most democratic approach, but in a country with expanding pressures and needs, you've had the technocrats that have had the sort of space to make the decisions. That's over now. That's over now. We have politicized our budget, and it's going to be harder and harder for, let's call it, technocratic decisions to be made as opposed to heavily political decisions. And that is worrying. It's a nuance that I think people aren't seeing as clearly, but this is certainly, I think, where the Minister of Finance has got us to, and it's not looking good.
You see why I don't like panel discussions, because each one of them could carry on for a whole hour. It's fascinating stuff. But Mark, before we go to the questions from the tribe, would you just speak to what you've heard from your three co-panelists?
Happy to do that. Perhaps let's start with Mr. Mashilo, who indicated many things I agree with, but he said he only heard one thing, VAT, and I gave him a six-point plan. That is but a symptom of a failed ideology on behalf of the ANC. They believe in a state that's ever expanding. And I think what we do in South Africa is we attach words to things to soften them a bit. So instead of calling it rolling blackouts. We say we've got load shedding, but it's rolling blackouts. That's what everybody else anywhere in the world would call it. And instead of calling it an embezzlement network, we call it patronage. It's a sophisticated structure of extraction. If we say to our counterparties, let's do a politically neutral spending review so we can see which government departments overlap with each other and eliminate the ones that aren't needed. Let's take these bodies that have 7 employees and 10 directors and the directors earning multi-million rand annual salaries and let's bin them. We can't afford them anymore. Let us focus on the inefficiencies within our current... It's almost like the penny hasn't dropped for the ANC that we're all arguing over the line items in our budget, as opposed to asking, what do those things represent? And the fact that we are now forced by the ANC to even talk about a gap, there is no gap. The budget that is now being proposed, if you take the 1995 Nelson Mandela budget and you adjust that for inflation to 2025 money, this budget is 3 times bigger than that budget. If you take the Mbeki government budget, which already had social grants baked into it, and you inflation adjust that, it was half of the current budget. And that economy was growing 5 to 6% a year, whereas we can't muster 0.6% at the moment. We have not a revenue problem in South Africa. We have an expenditure problem. But for the average voter, they can feel that they now need to pay more for things. They got a social relief of distress grant in 2020, which was 350 rand, and it hasn't gone up. If you just adjust for inflation, it should be closer to 440 rand. They can't afford the goods that they need. So we can have chats in this forum about everything that's wrong in the budget and the DA's policy approaches to getting the economy going. But the heart of the matter is South Africans are feeling VAT, and that's why we're talking about VAT, Prince. It's not a question of who will give up in this negotiation. It is, will the ANC realize they now represent 39% of the seats in parliament? They have to take on board their partner's suggestions, or they will try and steamroll us and we won't stand for it.
I've been asked to ask you to speak into the microphones, please. Not everyone's getting it clearly. Let's go on to questions and we'll start with this one, which says, Many of us, it's for you, Mark, have little confidence in the justification of the current departmental budgets. Will the DA insist on zero-based budgeting to reset every department's current budget? And if so, is there likely to be sufficient consensus within the Government of National Unity for such an exercise?
I'm just going to take a moment and, for the layperson here, explain zero-based budgeting. So in business, there's this concept where you say, we don't care what your budget was last year. Your budget this year is zero. Justify to us the things that you need. So if you apply that principle to, let's say, the Department of Correctional Services, you'll say to them, you don't get 40 billion rand this year. How many prisons are there? How many guards do you need? How much food do we need in those prisons? What equipment do we need? And that number might come out to 15 billion rand, not 40. And so it's a very healthy principle to every so often do zero-based budgeting to figure out what's actually needed versus an inflation or an above-inflation adjustment on last year's budget. That's never happened. Now, there are questions around what is legislated. I don't trust them one bit, but there's an organization called the Parliamentary Budget Office. They advise us, and they've given us a number which says 83% of our expenditure is legislated. So you can't zero it. But even if you took 17% of the budget and you said, that's now zero, let's justify the cost. It will already be a massive saving. So what we've proposed with this comprehensive spending review, first a sprint and then a 9-month process, will look a lot like a zero-based budget.
Okay. Linda Beck says, what does the Constitution or what do our laws say about dealing with this impasse? You must have done work on that, Mark.
Well, again, I feel a bit like an academic sitting here, and I haven't been in academia for 10 years, but let me quickly explain what happens from this point, if you'll bear with me. So we had the budget speech yesterday, which can at best be understood as a proposal by the minister. Within 16 days of that budget speech, a report called the Fiscal Framework. It needs to come through the committees that we sit on in Parliament, the Standing Committee on Finance and the National Council's Select Committee on Finance. And that report has to be voted on in Parliament. After that, there's three bills that has to pass through Parliament in the next 2 months. It's the Appropriations Bill, the Division of Revenue Bill, and the Tax Laws Amendment Bill. If we can't find agreement in the next 2 to 3 months, and we'll need some agreement for the first deadline and so on for the next three, so this report and three bills, if we can't find agreement, there are mechanisms in law that allow the government to keep functioning on last year's budget, and they can't spend more than 45% in the first 4 months and not more than 10% per month thereafter. So there isn't really the equivalent of a government shutdown in South Africa. But let's also be clear, the ANC believes in an expansionary state, and a stagnant budget isn't good for the embezzlement network.
Yeah. Keith Fairhurst, this is what our politicians spend their time and energy on. What about debating the state of Joburg and how to get the economy going? Hey, Prince, there we go. Open the door for you.
Yeah, they can't debate the state of Joburg because they created Joburg. It's as simple as that. And that's the thing about the ANC. I mean, I was pulling my hair sitting here this morning with the deputy president waffling.
Why? Because here's the thing.
I thought he was filibustering. I thought to myself, well, here we go. He's going to take up the whole hour. And then he's going to, at the end of the hour, he's like, goodbye, off he goes. But at least to his credit, he didn't. He sat down and he did answer the difficult question. So, okay. So let's, come on, someone can give him,
yeah,
give him a.
Okay, all right.
50-50.
Okay, in my head, maybe I've gone mad. In my head, was waffling. So here's the thing. The ANC was given in 1994 a working Gauteng and a working Johannesburg. That's the bottom line. I was 18 in 1994, so I didn't read this stuff in books. I used to go to Johannesburg myself. I remember that Johannesburg. Yes, it has expanded. There are parts of Johannesburg that have expanded. But it was a working city. Fast forward to today, it's no longer a working city. Now, you don't expect the very same people who demolished Johannesburg to sit and debate very seriously that they are going to fix Johannesburg. It's not going to happen. Anybody would think like that. So that's why they can't debate Johannesburg. That's the short answer. And you see, I'm not a diplomat. The solution to this problem is to put the ANC out of power. You see, Trevor, I'm not sure if Trevor is here. I listened to him in the morning. The solution in Zimbabwe is to put ZANU-PF out of power. You can't say you are going to solve Zimbabwe and rebuild it when the thieves and the thugs who have brought Zimbabwe to its knees are supposed to be in that conference where you are discussing how to rebuild Zimbabwe. It's not going to work. You are crazy. So yes, that's the short answer. They broke it. They can't fix it. A new group of people must come in and fix it.
Okay. Voting people out of power is very difficult if they steal the election. So as Trevor Ngobe said to us today, just watch the IEC and watch how the election goes, because we do know what happened in Sim.
Can I say something about stealing the elections? And this is where maybe Trevor may have missed. The ANC, any party in power, Liberation Movement, would like, when they lose, they would like to steal an election. It's a rule number one. Must keep that in mind. So the ANC does want to steal the elections. The fact that they have not been stealing our elections is because it has been impossible for them to do so. Here is one of the things, by the way, in Zim, when you vote, your votes are not counted where you have voted. They are transported somewhere. That's it. That's how it works in Zim. If Trevor is here, he can confirm. You vote here, they are transported somewhere. Along the way, something happens with the votes. In South Africa, that's not how we do it. In South Africa, you have party agents, he knows, Mark, who are there at the county, at the way we vote. They are counted there. All the party agents sign. What gets transmitted to Pretoria, to the election center, is the number which has been confirmed by their guys. So the ANC can change that. And that is actually very important. Lastly, the ANC has gotten 40%, right? And they haven't stolen the election. ZANU-PF lost and stole the election. The last point, security, our security forces. Our security, our army is not an ANC army. Keep this in mind. The Whig army, by the way, members of our army are aggrieved actually with the ANC. When the DA won in Johannesburg, the people suspected that the Metro Police in Johannesburg, who were run by the ANC before and they were employed by the ANC, wouldn't salute Mashaba when he was your mayor. You know what they did? They actually came to Mashaba to tell him the crimes that were committed by the ANC because they were also affected. So I'm not very worried when I look deep into the character of our state.
Magnus, where are we going to from here? Where's the upside? I know it's very hard for you to just find a bit of bright sunshine, but, you know, the sun always rises.
Well, I was going to buy some Sasol shares this afternoon, but the price is down 8% after Mr. Baloyi's speech, so that killed that one. Jokes aside, I mean, as I said yesterday in our other talk, we can thank the ANC that 10 years ago, they allowed us to take essentially most of our capital out of the country. And that has been a lifeline for a lot of South Africans. I'm repeating myself a little bit. Without that allowance to externalize your wealth, and it has been very, very spectacular success for people who did so, my view is that that prevented more people from immigrating because they could have semigrated to Hermanus and they could have their dollars invested all over the world.
Many have done so.
And many have done so. So without that allowance, things would have been totally different. So we have two major trends the last 10 or more years. One is Gauteng down to here, as you can see, and the rest is the money is out. We had a show of hands of people. I asked people, how many of you in the audience have taken money offshore? And I think I got, it was about 95% put up their hand. Now, that's not what our local asset managers want to hear, but that's what the people wanted. And they protected themselves. So to answer your question, given the current climate, if I have to advise a client on local versus offshore and it comes to the stock market, I cannot yet make a case for investing in the SA stock market. I can advise them to put some money in our bond market. That is producing phenomenal high returns and has done so for 10 years. So cash, bonds, and high income instruments have been phenomenal products, but that's not the go-to kind of stuff. That's not the sexy instruments on the market. Our equity market, in my view, is under severe pressure and will remain so with this kind of budget. With these kind of numbers coming out, budget deficits rising, unemployment rising, difficulty of just running a business in South Africa, I cannot, with an open heart, advise to have a big allocation in the JSE as yet.
But the strange thing here is that if you guys do stall the budget, then bonds, surely, are going to decline in value. The price, the yields are going to go up. So I'm not sure that we're on the same page here together. Or is the market telling us no, the DA will cave, they'll do a deal?
I'll just say that it's not our intention to stall the budget. We want a functional budget, but that has to incorporate the DA's policy positions into that budget, focus on creating jobs and growing the economy.
So you're not going to fold?
We have no intention of folding. If we have to buy a bit of time to get to a sensible solution, that's okay. But it's not a long-term strategy to keep stalling the budget.
And doesn't that mean bonds are quite risky?
Of course bonds are risky. But risk can be managed by the bond managers. And if you look at what our bond managers have been doing over the last 10 years, they've successfully managed a lot of risk. And the results are, in fact, if I'll make a statement that might surprise you. Many high-income funds in South Africa have beaten the equity markets, multi-asset funds in South Africa by about 2 percentage points with very low volatility. So it's been a very good place to get some predictability in your portfolio and then having money offshore, which is giving you the growth, that hasn't changed in my view.
And I'd like you to tackle a tough question. Magnus has explained the play was semigrate, get your money offshore, live in this incredible part of the world, which is well governed. Well done to the municipality here. They really, really do an excellent job, and hence house prices go up in the same way as Chris Pappas's job in the Mgeni municipality, seeing house prices going up. So that's where we are. But that play, is that a play that one continues with, or what's the next play? What do you do from here?
Well, I'm not a financial advisor.
No, you need a mic. And speak into it, please.
I'm not a financial advisor, so I'm going to change the subject, if I may. I'm not giving up on South Africa, and we've spent the last nearly a year thinking hard about what are the priorities to get us out of this mess. You can't fix everything at once in the country. You have to start first, which nobody wants to do, with a diagnosis of what is wrong. And a lot of our speakers sort of came with big words and big generalizations. I think it needs a lot more specificity, and we need a common diagnosis. One of the things that's wrong is that our state doesn't work. So you can't accept that proposition and in the next sentence say, I want the state to do this, that, and the next thing. It's not going to happen. So what we've done is try and identify, which is a hard task, what are the priorities for the coalition government, as it turned out, we started before that, to actually move towards a growth strategy. And what are the things you have to do? They range from you have to get the top people in the country, the best possible people to be in charge of key institutions, whether it's the biggest SOEs on the board, the chief executive officer, the financial officer. We have to change the game here, and that requires, as a first step, getting the right people in place. You have to move from that to reestablishing the rule of law, which we have not had one successful prosecution of a big fish involved in state capture. The National Prosecuting Authority does not have access to the full archive of the Zondo Commission, which is held by the Minister of Justice. Think about that. The head of the NPA has asked the president to remove somebody they have investigated who occupies the regional directorship of Johannesburg in the NPA. August 2003, the request was made, which is the legal process. They have yet to hear from the president. So without the rule of law, without the best people running our critical institutions, you are going to have continued corruption and elite looting. And you're going to have lots and lots of our tax money wasted. They don't know how to spend money properly. They're officials who don't do their jobs properly. There are teachers who don't know how to teach maths or science or English. So the issues facing the country are complex. You can see a picture in the budget. But unless I don't want to pay more and more tax to a government that doesn't know how to spend the tax they already have. And that's critically important. So a common diagnosis, a seriousness about growth, not just words. What hard choices are we going to make that will get the country to start growing again? And unless we grow, we're not going to get jobs. And unless we change the laws to create much more labor-intensive firms, we're not going to get jobs. So by the stroke of a pen, You could say that if the collective bargaining deals that Alec and his workers get into should apply to Alec and his workers, whatever they agree, but they should not be extended by the Minister of Labour to anybody else. But that's what we do. And we kill off small businesses and we deter new startups from starting. So the diagnosis leads to the insights into what's wrong with the South African economy. And unless we get beyond the words, growth, inclusive growth, whatever, which no one really defines, we're going to be in this situation next year again.
Two minutes each, the art of the possible.
My wife and I moved back from the UK in 2020. I was finishing up my PhD when she was finishing hers up when I started mine. We got married on that side. We had very comfortable lives there. I was building out a business that was multi-jurisdictional. The reason I came back is because I felt that if it's not us, then who would stand up? And if it wasn't then, when would it happen? And so when I came into Parliament out of the private sector last year, it was simply because of this calling. I felt a calling to come and try and help. I tried to explain it to my wife as needing to stop the bleeding. And it starts, it starts by having a titanium spine, you know, saying, as Gandalf did on a bridge, thou shalt not pass. And it comes at a cost, for sure. But if we get it right, might take just slightly more than a minute on this. I went to Somaliland at the end of last year as an election observer. It's a territory within Somalia aiming to be an independent state. It's got about 6 million people. Their annual budget is $200 million. They run a military which takes up 43% of their budget to defend themselves from the warlords in Somalia. They have functional healthcare, functional education. It's a society where if you speak to people who've gone there as election observers over 15 years, they talk about how it's progressing. There are now 6 hotels in the capital. There used to be one. They're going forward on a budget of $200 million a year. That's the equivalent of a small municipality's budget in South Africa. We have so much money flowing around here. We've got so many resources. We've got some of the most resilient, joyful, optimistic people I've found anywhere in the world. I've been to more than 80 countries. I say that just for comparison's sake. This place has potential like I've not seen. It is a rocket ship waiting to go off. It doesn't have to be the way it is. And so I'm super optimistic about the future. But it'll mean standing up.
I listen.
Like just out of like petrol.
There we go.
I'm being sabotaged by the mic. I listened to Mark and I listened to N, and I agree with them 150%. You would have to be irrational not to agree with them, because what they say, it's what we want as South Africans. And you will never get what you are talking about done, unfortunately, if South Africa is ruled and governed by a wrong bunch. Because everything that you're talking about, it's politics. That's what is called politics. So what you said, it's actually a manifesto. This is the stuff that goes into a manifesto of a party. And when the party gets elected, it gets a majority, it implements exactly what you're talking about. So for as long as you have the ANC being the dominant component of our government. And by the way, they are actually holding the steering wheel as we speak of our government. You will not get what you are talking about done. Full stop. In terms of diagnosis, you know as much as I do, and Mark knows it, by the way. Your party, I remember, adopted the National Development Plan. They adopted it. I remember. And said, we support it. If you read that document, it has got what you're talking about, diagnosis. Even in terms of interventions that need to be made by when. That plan has that. But the problem is that the ANC is not interested in repairing our country because they are the ones who damage it. So what is the plan? The plan is we must take politics very seriously with the elite. We must plot and find a group of the best among us and position this group to go into politics, to replace Penny Penny and to replace the ANC and Umkhonto we Sizwe and the EFF. That's the only time that we can do what Anne is talking about. I'm afraid if we don't do that, we will meet year after year and complain.
Toughness, art of the possible.
Just saying, I live in South Africa, my wife, my five children, my six children, four grandkids. I'm actually an exception, or our family is an exception. We're all in South Africa, believe it or not. In fact, three of my kids were abroad, they all came back, which is fantastic. I've got my kids around me, unlike many, many other families in South Africa. We're Yannies in Perth and Sunnies in Toronto. So that's a fact of life. I can only advise my clients to the best of my ability on the facts that I have at my disposal and that I've been doing for a very, very long time. And the facts, 13, 14, 15 years ago, started signaling there's trouble on its way. And it started with the downgradings, the Gupta years, the Zuma years. And I had a responsibility to tell my clients, first of all, you can now take some money offshore. We think it's a safer place for your long-term equity, and it has been spectacularly so. I don't need to tell you. Your stock market portfolio is a sign of how much wealth you've created for that portfolio relative to money that was forced to stay in South Africa. I reiterate the fact that 10 years ago, the ANC, and we're still not quite sure, opened the gates to this global investment arena, and people did take it. The late Mike Schuessler did some numbers for me before he passed away, and he worked out South Africans have got more money abroad than foreigners have invested in South Africa. So South Africans have embraced the offshore with your money and live locally. And that has been a tremendous advantage until the facts change. And I am looking continuously for any signs that this body is starting to wake up, this rocket ship is starting to warm up. Until that point, I have a duty to advise my clients, I think you need to externalize or acquire some offshore assets to protect yourself against the dysfunction of the ANC in South Africa. And that strategy has worked fantastically well over the last 10 years. Thank you, Alec.
Last word?
Let me end on a hopeful note.
Oh, no, we lost the mic. Seems like these mics are really...
Let me end on a hopeful note. I recently interviewed the Minister of Deregulation and Transformation in the Argentinian government, a very smart man I happen to know. They are deregulating a law or a regulation every day. He does it. He tweets it to everyone who follows him. The president follows up and retweets it. And they say, tell us how it's going. Is it working? He's got an open portal. You can write in and say, this is a really stupid law. Get rid of it. And they watch it and they monitor it. And in less than 2 years, this government has brought down inflation, has minimized the state. They've got rid of 30 or 40,000 civil servants. They've increased welfare to the poor and to people in need. And they have great plans for the next year. So it is possible to reform. You've got to stop just talking, like the president appointed a red tape czar and a red tape, this and that, and then we never heard about it ever again. They have a timetable. They went to Parliament 3 weeks after being elected. They passed an omnibus bill to give them the power to deregulate. You were given a choice as a parliament to say yes or no. No debate. Yes, they got it. A minority government. And they're implementing it and they've got a strict timetable. So whatever you think of their politics, there you've got the minister is a highly educated man. He'd been thinking about this before. He spent 2 years working out which laws had to go. He's a fantastic person to do this job. On the other hand, we have the Minister of Defense who couldn't do education. So it can be done, but you've got to think, like in any business, about the people in charge and about the policies they're going to implement and the purpose. And so the hopeful note is it can be done.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Yeah.
Thank you very much, panel. This was a fascinating discourse, and we will have it all recorded for you for posterity. It's been such a pleasure to get your inputs. Thank you.